I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live. It's only just a matter of Welcome to Susie Larson Live. I'm always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, 7 years after my guest today thought she'd overcome her daily battles with anxiety and depression, she suffered a major panic attack, worse than anything she'd experienced before. And that relapse caused my guest, Rebecca Lyons, to take a closer look at her response to fear. And as she focused on escaping fear rather than the fear itself, she discovered 4 rhythms to help replace stress and anxiety with peace and purpose. Rebecca Lyons is my guest today, and she joins me to talk about the release of her brand new Rhythms for Life planner and journal, 90 Days to Peace and Purpose. So I want you to let me tell you about her. We'll get the conversation started. Rebecca Lyons is a national speaker, host of Rhythms for Life podcast, best-selling author of Rhythms of Renewal. She's an old soul with a contemporary, honest voice. She reveals her own battles to overcome anxiety and depression and invites others to boldly pursue their God-given purpose. Alongside her husband, Gabe, Rebecca raises 4 children, 2 with Down syndrome. And I told her before the show, she should have been on long ago, but it's so good to have you today, Rebecca. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Looking forward to the conversation. We love to start every day talking scripture. Wondering if there's a passage you've just been pondering these days as you spend time with God.
Yes, 2 Timothy 1:7 is a famous one for a lot of people I know, but it is one that's top of mind these days in particular, which is, hey, Rebecca, I've not given you a spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound mind. And I grew up learning the King James Version, and I love the way it languages sound mind. It means there's a sound groundedness in our mind. There's a calm, a peace that we really do need as we navigate the waters that we're in right now.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Well, if you don't mind, give us a little backstory on your journey, your battle with anxiety and fear, and how God met you there.
Yes. So for me, it really began about a decade ago. My husband, Gabe, and I had moved to New York City, like the heart of Manhattan, from the suburbs in the South. And we had 3 children at the time that were 9, 7, and almost 5. And I remember joking with friends, it's like you're going off to college, except with kids. And turns out that's not a thing, actually. we were just resetting. It was this midlife reset. We were going there because we felt this deep conviction to just be a part of our faith intersecting with culture, being on the front lines of culture. We were meeting a lot of people in arts, media, government, policy, education that loved God, but often felt isolated and alone in their vocational career. And so we wanted to serve those people, and a lot of them came through New York City often as a hub of enterprise, and we just wanted to be present there as salt and light. And so as a result, we sold most of what we had, and we moved our minivan and our 2 toy poodles all the way to the heart of Manhattan. And I remember my youngest daughter was starting kindergarten, so I had kind of ended that 10-year run of diapers and Cheerios and poop, you know, being home full-time, rolling up my sleeves, just serving in that capacity. My oldest son, who was 9 at the time, had a Down syndrome diagnosis, so that even had, you know, changed the trajectory of my life when he was born 9 years earlier when I was 26. So this time in New York was almost a time of recovering, like, who is Rebecca before children or outside of them being home? What do I do with these 6, 7, 8 hours a day that I now have kind of to look in the mirror and going, what are you doing with, what does calling and vocation look like in this new moment? And so I was taking different classes downtown. I had a background in design and, you know, I just loved that. So I was taking classes downtown, but turns out 4 months into my time into New York City, I had my first panic attack on a flight from Atlanta back to LaGuardia. It was almost midnight and it was a tumultuous, horrible turbulence. And I just remember something rose in me from the soles of my feet to the top of my head. And I was consumed and gripped by a fear of being trapped And it was not even about the plane crashing. It was about when it finally landed, I would be trapped in the back of the plane. And so it was kind of crazily rooted in claustrophobia, but it was something I'd never known, and I had no idea what to do with it. So while everyone's doubling down and buckling their seatbelts, I, on the other hand, am, you know, barreling like, you know, St. Elmo's fire, running to the front of the plane. And the sweet flight attendant who's like, you know, on her little jump seat is like, no. And I'm like, yes. And I'm just running and I'm like, move. And I was like, son, one of us was going to win. And I had momentum. Mm. And I remember collapsing in the galley at the front of the plane. Mm. And I just kept saying panic, panic, panic. And that what began that day while everyone exited the plane continued for the next 18 months on planes, trains, elevators, subways, and crowds. We had if you've been to New York City, you know it's impossible to avoid those things. And so God had allowed me to enter a spiral in some ways of getting to the end of myself to really help me rebuild a life.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I've heard so many stories, Rebecca, of high-profile leaders and people hidden in the shadows who've gone through the same thing. And how did God meet you? When did you start to notice a turnaround? When did you? Because you know, it's one thing to experience that and feel that gripping, you know, sense, as you said, that things are closing in. It's another thing to be bracing for impact because you know it's already happened once or twice or 20 times. So to brace for impact in case it happens again, you start to live in the fight flight. I mean, how did you navigate, before I ask you how God met you, how did you and Gabe navigate those incredible months?
Right. Well, it's true. The muscle memory of the amygdala that starts to fire, fight, flight, or freeze. I was definitely a fighter and a flighter. I didn't freeze. I almost just got so aggressive with trying to escape. So what began on that flight, then on an, let's say, for example, 2 weeks later on a subway, I just had to go two stops underground to see my daughter do a production at her school. She had a solo. And so I'm thinking, okay, we can do this. This is not a plane crashing in the sky. We're just going downstairs, we're getting on the subway. Well, what happens was this hits in the month of December where all the tourists are coming and they have all their bags. Somehow people think they're only supposed to buy for Christmas while they're in New York City.
Right.
So they get on the subway with multiple bags, and then right as the doors are closing, 20 more people hop on, and I'm all of a sudden going, no, 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 this is far too crowded. I can't breathe. And I'm literally the woman who puts her coffee on the ground and I'm trying to claw the doors back open right before we take off. And it's just because something comes over me that says, if you don't get out right now, you will die. It's this lie of that fight or flight that says, if you don't escape, you won't survive. I can't even explain the closing in, but that's really how claustrophobia works. It's this metaphor and a literal sense of feeling trapped and powerless to the fear or the torment, quite frankly, that's coming over you. So that happened then, and it would happen on an elevator. I would, you know, we had Bloomingdale's around the corner, and the kids' section where the shoe department was on the 9th floor. And so from our apartment, I could walk to it, and I started to, like, watch the galley of doors. There's, like, a line of 10 elevators. And I would wait to see if there was one where there were just like three people because I wouldn't hop on alone, but I couldn't hop on one with 9 people or 10 people because that would be too crowded. So if more people came on, I would jump back off. I mean, it literally looked insane. And finally, I would go find the stairwell and I would just go the 9 flights because I just was like, I can't do this. And so that was just a glimpse of what normal became. I would walk across Central Park and not even take the subway anymore. I got really fit that year because I'm always just, I would rather not put myself in that situation because I was less afraid in reality of the being trapped, but more afraid of my body in response to the feeling of this kind of illusionary doom, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And so I was more afraid of me than I was of the circumstance itself. And so I started just shrinking back and avoiding all kinds of things.
Well, because it feels like an involuntary response, you know? I mean, you could be having a great day, and all of a sudden you start to feel things rise up, and the panic sets in. It's not like you turned on a switch and think, you know, this is going to be scary, so I'm going to panic, you know? I mean, there is an involuntariness to it, isn't there?
Right. And every emotion is triggered by a memory, the more I know now that I've studied the brain for a decade. So when you start to feel something, it's partly because your brain is processing so fast, it's actually the emotion is triggered by the memory of last time something similar to this happened, you reacted this way. And so that emotion is already starting before, preemptively, before even you are connecting the dots that this is a memory of what you did before. That's why people have a muscle memory of the things that are fearful, because every time they face those in the past, it made them afraid. And so now you're almost preemptively making that circumstance fearful even before it ever is, because all the memories are attached to that same emotion of fear.
Yeah, they say nerves that fire together wire together. So you've got the experience, you've got the emotional
Yeah.
response, the two become one, and anything reminiscent of that triggers. And I think, again, it's so common. I so appreciate your honesty about it. We're going to pause here. When we come back, then to the question, how God met you, how you navigated through it, and how you found breakthrough. I know some are listening today, sitting at the edge of their seat going, you're writing my story. You're telling my story. Talking to best-selling author Rebecca Lyons, and she released today this hardcover, big, heavy, I love it. It's this hardcover planner and journal, Rhythms for Life, 90 Days to Peace and Purpose. Day by day, you're challenged on your inputs, your outputs, your rest, how you get restored, how you connect with others, how you create. It's wonderful. You're going to love it. We've got 5 copies to give away. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484, and we will be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning into Susie Larson Live. You know, I just wanted to let that song play out. Sometimes you just got to breathe. You got to exhale. You got to remember who God is. Remember who you are to Him. I'm talking to best-selling author Rebecca Lyons today, celebrating the release of her big, heavy, I love it, hardcover journal. It's a planner and journal, Rhythms for Life, 90 Days to Peace and Purpose. We'll get to what's in this journal, but I want you to know we've got 5 copies to give away. To me, it's this invitation to exhale. It's an invitation to care for your soul, to pay attention to your inputs and outputs. As I said, we've got 5 copies to give away. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. So Rebecca, prior to the break, you were talking, giving us your backstory on your battle with anxiety, with panic attacks, and cannot even thank you enough for your raw honesty around that. So my question now is, you know, 18 months is a long time, especially living in New York where you can't avoid crowds and pressed circumstances. How did you break through? How did God meet you?
I'm glad you asked. It was quite an up and down struggle. There was a lot of crying out, a lot of release, a lot of surrender, also a lot of shrinking back and avoiding things. I do remember what began as rooted in claustrophobia would then slowly over time morph into waking from dreams in a panic attack in my bed, or walking the streets of New York City and being on a playground and barely being able to take a deep breath. So it almost evolved even not just entrapped in tight spaces, but more of a smothering, like a shallow breathing, which again, now that I know the brain, that is the fight or flight response that's actually overwhelmed. And you, breath is the first to go. It's so interesting that the breath of God that gives us life is the first thing that starts to feel like you can't get a deep breath. So a lot of times panic attacks will go after the root of life, whether it's your heart. Some people feel like they're having a heart attack, and some people are feeling like they're being smothered, like they can't actually get a deep breath. And so for me, it was very attached to shallow breathing, and I was just trying so hard to fill my lungs. And so I remember September 20th of 2011. In particular, I wrote the day down. I was in a a Bible study with four women who had moved to the city. We called it a Bible study. It was definitely a support group with some scripture thrown in. We were all like, can we keep going? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of us had moved from other cities, and just the pace and the unknown and a lot of just the intensity, it was a very steep learning curve for a lot of us. And I do remember them saying, how's the panic? And I said, it's fine, but I didn't like to talk about it. At this point, it was just, I felt shameful, honestly, that I just couldn't get victory in this area, because God and I had walked together for a long time. And yet, for whatever reason, this spiral just continued. And so all this to say, I do remember them praying for me that day. And that night, in the middle of the night, around 3 a.m, I woke up in the middle of the night from a dream, and I just felt complete panic. And it was just the middle of a panic attack. And my husband woke with me, and I couldn't speak. I just, you know, gripped his arm, and he knew the drill. He just began to pray. And as he's in the middle of praying for me, I believe that God just gave me my voice. And out of nowhere, I just, in the dark of the room, I just raised my left hand and I said, rescue me, deliver me. I cannot do this without you. And in that particular moment, I don't know why it didn't happen prior or why it happened the way it did, but my body just broke in the bed, and I collapsed, and all was still. Like, all the shaking, all the panic, all the anxiousness, all the inability to breathe just stopped. And it was like a complete calm, and nothing could even move but my eyes, you know, back and forth in the dark. And it was this stillness and peace, total and complete peace that I'd never experienced before without having to exit the situation for the panic to subside. And I just remember the next day leaving my apartment, kind of like tiptoeing out the door, going like, did it take? Like, I wouldn't have called it healing at the time. It was almost just this encounter of peace. And I started to walk out of my apartment the next day, and I started to see the city in living color. It was like something had lifted, like almost a cloud of doom had lifted off of me. A fear had been lifted off of me. And I started to just notice people just like me, 1 in 4 on medication for some sort of anxiety or depression, just a whole population of people gripped in fear. And that's when I kind of got that life verse reminder. Hey, Rebecca, remember, I haven't given you a spirit of fear. I've given you power, love, and a sound mind. And anxiety had become my fancy word for fear. I just walked in it. I lived in it. I carried it. And so I said, I started to go, God, if this is not something that you have given me, but you've called me into power and sound mind, and peace. Goodness gracious, Jesus is our peace. He's the Prince of Peace, and we come under that covering of peace. Then show me how to walk this out. And that's when I started meeting with people one by one over coffee, or just started teaching in these smaller groups, just like my experience. And I did not have another panic attack for 7 years. It was gone. And so that was the rescue of God. I very much liken it to Psalm 18, just to show me his rescue. I had never known the rescue of God like that in the 30 years I call myself a Christian. I accepted Christ at 5, but it was partly because I didn't want to burn. I didn't really know what I was being saved from, but I did know that Jesus was real. And I knew that story of the gospel was true. And I wanted a relationship with him. And that was enough for my 5-year-old self. But my 35-year-old self said, oh, this is the power of the resurrection right here. And this is what I want to walk in. And I want to learn again what it looks like to grow in faith in this way.
Wow, Rebecca, what a story. I'm sitting at the edge of my seat, and I'm trying to remind myself to breathe as I'm listening to you. And but you said for 7 years, and then can you tell us what happened then, if you don't mind?
Sure. I feel like this is like airing all my laundry, but wow. I have written about it, so I guess it's okay. Gabe always jokes that I'm a chronic oversharer, and he always has to edit my book to make sure that he approves of everything I put in. And then eventually he just succumbs to it and goes, okay, it's fine. You just go ahead and say it.
You're hilarious. I love it. I love it. I love you. I love you. So keep going.
Okay. So what happens after that is I begin to write about it. And I kind of write the crash and burn story in my first book, Free Fall to Fly. And then I start teaching about it. And the great irony of all this is that I wrote three books, like Free Fall to Fly and then You Are Free, which is all about freedom, about that rescue moment. And if Jesus is who he says he is, why don't we live a life of abundance, for crying out loud? Why are we all enslaved? And so it was really just kind of like, let's get to the heart of the matter. Is this real? You know, is this actually transformational? And if it's not, why not? So I just kept writing on those things and teaching. And the hilarity is that God would put me on a plane every Friday night to travel the country to teach about the rescue of God in the same place that gave me my first panic attack. So I just think that it's so kind of God to, you know, the old place of panic became a sanctuary in the sky. Of course, there were still temptations if I got on a plane that was unexpectedly small, or there was a long delay and there was a snow delay and we had to de-ice five times. In fact, there's one story I tell where I'm going to teach a message on freedom in Atlanta and we can't get off the runway in New York. And the girl next to me is having a panic attack because we've been de-icing for 6 hours. And I'm like, don't worry, I've done this before. It's going to be okay.
Wow.
Like, you know, like, part of this idea of like our pain becomes purpose. We are able to use the strongholds in our life in prior seasons to help bring freedom for other people too, because the power of testimony in Revelation 12:11, he says the enemy is bound by two things. It's Christ's blood and your story, your testimony of God at work in your life. And so I do believe that a lot of times we walk through hard things. God allows those things to happen so that we can be a living testimony of God's power and anointing. Not that we would ask for those things or really want that story, but he always makes it for good. He always makes it for good. Nothing is wasted. And so that's what the next several years look like. And then when I was launching and writing into my third book, that's when this panic attack happened. And that's why I begin the book that way. I was in the season of writing. And what I learned is that I had put a lot of practices in place for safeguards for health, but I was getting really busy and saying yes to a lot of wonderful things and did not have enough margin and capacity in my life. And I honestly think we can get ahead of the pace that God's prepared for us. Psalm 139 very clearly says that he knit us in our mother's womb and our works were wonderful and our frame was not hidden from him. We were made in a secret place. It says his eyes saw our unformed body and all our days were written and planned before one of them began. So God has a plan and a destiny for our lives, and he knits us with birthright gifts to use to get there. But we can outrun the pace that he's prepared for mm-hmm. us. And mm-hmm. I found that I was doing that. I found that I was like, hey, God, are we good? Okay, good. I'm going, you know, and I wasn't resting and restoring enough. I was doing the output rhythms, those last two of connect and create, but at the rest and restore were on such a depletion that by the time I was in this venue for a retreat we were hosting, my phone dies. We're in a 100-year-old building. Nobody's coming back for 2 hours because we had a break in the afternoon. I go to the bathroom in this tiny stall, and it was like a cement walls, 12 inches thick, and literally the doorknob breaks of this 100-year-old home.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm just like, oh my goodness, what a time to break. Unbelievable. So hold that thought. And when we come back, we're going to hear the rest of this story with Rebecca Lyons. Again, you're going to love this planner journal, Rhythms for Life Planner and Journal, 90 Days to Peace and Purpose. Text if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. More with Rebecca Lyons in just a moment. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, having a fantastic conversation with best-selling author Rebecca Lyons, celebrating the release of her awesome new planner journal, Rhythms for Life, 90 Days to Peace and Purpose. And we were just unpacking her story, though, and I've just got to say, I'm just hanging on every word. So prior to the break, Rebecca, you talked about an 18-month period where you walked through really unbelievable panic attacks and anxiety, especially if you're on an elevator, on a flight, and how God met you one night and really lifted it from you. And for 7 years, you were pretty much panic-free, and then ministry started to kick in. You released a bunch of books, and as you were saying, and I fully agree, we can outpace God's grace for us. And so you're in this place where you're doing a lot of good things, and you're also testifying to the freedom that God won for you. So I'm sure there was great fruit in that. But in this place, you find yourself at a retreat place, an old building, and take it from there, if you would.
Sure. So like I was saying, I was in a bathroom stall in a house over the cliffs of Carmel, right? Just picture it. It's probably 100 years old, cement walls everywhere, 12 inches thick. And the whole group had disbanded to Carmel by the Sea for the whole afternoon of free time. And I just texted my husband, I'll catch up with you guys in about 20 minutes. And as I did that, I had an old iPhone that powered off at like 40% because it was old and I was just too cheap to upgrade it. And so as I'm doing that, I'm locking the door to this. I don't know why I locked it. The house was empty. I probably didn't need to lock it, but I did.
The little toilet area.
And it was this antique lock and it was stuck and it wouldn't open the door. And it was solid, solid wood. And then it's all concrete walls because it was like this old, historic, beautiful piece of art, this house that somebody was letting us use to host this gathering. And it just rose in me as if no minute had gone by from 7 years prior. It was more intense than any panic attack I had ever had. It like came back so fast. It was shocking to me how gripped, and I felt it coming on because the minute I'm toggling it and I'm like trying to fight what's coming over me with like logic, and it's not working, and it consumes me, and I'm trembling, going, nobody's coming back for 2 hours. I have no way to contact anybody. I have no way to get out this door. I am trapped, and literally, like, the waves of panic that lead to despair, that lead to death, like, were just, like, assaulting, and it's hard to explain to someone who's never had this before. But if you've had this before and you know how real and powerless you feel to it, it's mind-blowing how helpless you feel.
Yeah.
And so while this is happening, I look up. I don't know how. I mean, it's just the Spirit of God. It was like kind of a higher ceiling. And I looked up and there was this tiny little antique window in the top corner of the wall back behind the toilet area. And I was like, where did that come from? And can these hips fit through that window? That's what I'm thinking. I'm also thinking, will that little latch on that antique? It was like a Palladian window that was round on the top. I'm like, I don't even know if that lock's going to open, but at least I could see, you know, a little bit of the water through the window. And so I hoisted myself up on the back of the toilet. I tried the latch to this window. Remarkably, it opened. So then I'm just thinking, can my body fit through this window? I don't know. It's not very long. I mean, I think it was like 20 inches by maybe 12. And so I get the top half of my body out and I'm breathing and I'm just like, hey, we're there. I mean, if I have to hang here half in and outside of this window for the next 2 hours, I will do it. But I can see the light, you know? So I got there and then slowly scraped my thighs and my shins and got out onto the rocks. And I just remember falling there in that moment. And I'm looking out at the Pacific Ocean, trembling, just like quivering. And I'm thinking, God, am I a fraud? I mean, for 7 years, I have taught about the rescue of God and people have walked into freedom after freedom, after freedom, after freedom. And then all it takes is one moment like this. And I'm right back. Like, that's the power and devastation of relapse. And so this is speaking to the person who has understood like the whispers of relapse and how detrimental and defeating that can be. And so that day I just kept wrestling with God, like, what was this about? Why did this happen? Am I a fraud? I tried to explain it to my husband later. I mean, if you weren't there, it's really hard to relive it or feel it, but in the way I carried it. And I remember that night in the dark laying back And I just couldn't stop crying. Like the tears would pool from the corners of my eyes to my ears. I was laying on my back. I'm looking at that stark ceiling. And I just say, God, what is the point of all of this? Why? Why is this where we are? What is this about? And it's clear as I could just feel it and hear it in my spirit. I heard, Rebecca, I don't promise that fear won't come knocking, but I always make a way of escape. And it reminded me of that verse. I always make of a way of escape so that you will be able to bear it. I am your ever-present help in every moment of trouble. And it was this reminder of the withness of God, the Emmanuel, of embodied, that Christ took on flesh and came and walked among us so that we would have an embodied understanding of the nearness of God. And I realized that, like, all those years that I felt panic or I didn't feel panic, God was just as near the whole time. But I almost needed like a visceral reminder of how much he was the one who has been sustaining me and carrying me in trouble, out of trouble, in victory, in defeat. Like he has always been with us. And so it changed my posture and tone really around the mental health space because I realized, you know, early on people would be like, oh, that's great. Must be nice. That's your story of rescue and healing. But I'm still walking through this every single day and I have yet to understand the deliverance that you've come to know or discover. And I actually am grateful, honestly, so much for the understanding of God's nearness in pain. That's more of a victory in some ways than it is to never experience the pain again, because it's just not real life to think that we're not going to walk in fear and struggle because the enemy, his whole goal is to thwart and steal and kill and destroy our faith. And so he'll use every means necessary to do that. But God is basically saying, no matter what the tempter says or does, I am here and I will make a way of escape. I will deliver you. The victory is mine. And so now I walk with a very close, clear understanding of his presence and his nearness. And so I still press on. I've learned with claustrophobia that the only way you combat claustrophobia is through exposure. You actually have to continue to put yourself in situations that are scary to retrain the brain to think, hey, this will not kill you. These doors will open. And it requires risk every single time. I'm not saying it's like, oh, no big deal. It requires risk. But what I'm learning is that bravery is moving scared. It's actually about taking the steps towards things that are overwhelming to grow our faith. That's why faith requires, it's the substance of what you hope for, the evidence of what you cannot see. And so for me, this journey has been fortifying to my faith, basically saying that God is with me, that he will protect. And even on the moments where things might happen that are out of my control, he will make a way of escape. That we can bear it. And I just think that principle applies in all of life. And so the rhythms got really loud for me from that point forward. I just started joining God, going, how do I establish a baseline for emotional health and nearness to you, and practicing rhythms where we're abiding in step, whether we're resting, restoring, connecting, or creating.
You know, I'm just over relating to you in so many ways. When I was a little girl, about 3 years old, my brother and I were playing hide and seek, and we got trapped in a toy chest. The babysitter couldn't find us, and when my dad finally crowbarred it open, we were passed out. We were so, there was just like no oxygen. We'd almost suffocated in that thing. And
oh,
so,
my gracious.
Yeah, terrible. And I have had those moments that rise up in me as you're talking about. But on a deeper scale, I've battled chronic illness with Lyme disease, and just ravaged by it in my younger years as a young mom of three boys, and just kind of had dealt with some chronic issues the last 20 years, but I'm a fighter and I've come a long way and I'm a health-minded person and all of that. But 5 years ago, I had a massive relapse and I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And I'm listening to you as you talk about that. And I think at times when you walk through something so deep, I don't know if there's a subconscious thought that I have a pass, I don't have to go through this again, and you can just testify out of that place. But it just reminded me of the dependence that we all really are called to, because we need him that much. And no storm does he allow unless he intends to prove something deeper about who we are and who he is through it. And so we don't have to fear. We can know that, you know, the enemy is on a short leash. So anyway, all that to say, I mean, you've come through stronger. You've come through more sure of his word and his name and his promises, but also, like, you know, as well as I've done, new disciplines for navigating, because knowing my limits and knowing what I need to do. So let's talk about these. Rest is this first one. And you say, slows us down, examines our hearts, allows us to get quiet, inspires gratitude to receive spiritual health. So say more about what you learned about rest.
Well, the reason why a lot of us are so frantic and frazzled and stressed and anxious is partly because we don't give ourselves permission to rest. We've lost somehow this idea that rest is mandatory versus optional. I think it feels like maybe if we get all the other things done, we'll sit down. But truly, that is us outpacing God in every way, because God himself rested. And if he rested, certainly it's not optional for us who are not God, who need to be very well aware of our finite frailty. And so rest, that rest rhythm is all about this invitation to slow down, to pause, to examine the heart, to discern, to listen. So I talk a lot about morning and evening routines, routines for deep sleep, tech detox, quieting yourself in Sabbath rest. You know, what are ways you can live in connection with your people and just get the other things that are distracting you from one another out of the way for a pocket of time each weekend. I talk a lot about silence and stillness and just like what is even the quiet, which isn't loneliness. It's solitude is not loneliness. Solitude is very much of a communal time with God where we're replenished. We're not feeling alone. We're feeling loved and poured into. So this rest rhythm really comes from that idea. You know, the American Institute of Stress said a couple years ago that almost 4 out of 5 of us have physical symptoms of stress. That's racing heart, shallow breathing, sleepless nights, a mind that won't quit. And that can also come out in eczema. It can come out in eating patterns. It can energy levels. It can be all these things. But the point is, it's because we have not learned how to rest. And so rest to me is the foundation of all four rhythms. Because if you don't get those input rhythms right, you cannot give what you haven't received. And the risk of burnout is so great that if you fully burn out, usually in the vocation that God's anointed for you, you will not return. And that's not what we're about. God calls us to a race of endurance. He tells us he will be our source of strength. But that just means we have to actually submit to the boundaries of rhythm, like even the circadian rhythm, for crying out loud. You know, God's like, hey, the sunset emits natural red light, which is melatonin for your body, which is trying to tell you to go to sleep. And a sunrise emits blue light, which tells you to wake up. The problem is we have devices in our hands all day long that emit blue light, even at 11 p.m. saying, wake up, wake up, wake up. So we've got this industrial and technological revolution that's feeding us this lie, like the machines in the factories back in the 1920s, that were always on. They always stayed on out of efficiency because it costs more money to turn them off and then power back up the next morning. The problem is we are not machines. We're humans who actually have boundaries and constraints of rhythms that require us to submit to so that we can actually flourish in that area. So I've learned that real freedom comes within constraint. If you look at Psalm 139, he says, you hem me in behind and before, you've laid your hand upon me. This idea that God actually establishes flourishing within the boundaries or the guardrails of rhythm.
So good, Rebecca. We're going to pause here. When we come back, I want you to talk a little bit more about restore, connect, and create. Just unpack each of those and even specifically how you live these out, what that looks like. And you'll find these in Rebecca's new planner and journal, Rhythms for Life. It's this heavy, hardcover, beautiful planner journal which just calls you to evaluate your inputs, your outputs, to cause you to connect with others, to rest. I mean, it is beautiful. 90 days to peace and purpose. We've got 5 copies to give away. All right. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. More with Rebecca Lyons in a moment. Thanks so much for tuning into Susie Larson Live. That's something I think God wants for you today and every day. Pause, inhale, exhale, rest. Know that more is on God's shoulders than on yours. So great talking to best-selling author Rebecca Lyons. Every word of this conversation has been pure gold. So if you just tuned in, once the live show is over, the show will go to podcast and you can find it and listen to the whole show in its entirety. Rhythms for Life, Planner and Journal, 90 Days to Peace and Purpose. We've got 5 copies to give away. Text book, the word book, if you want in on the drawing, to 877-933-2484. So we talked about rest, as you said, as a foundational discipline. Talk about restore. You said it offers food for fuel, play, and adventure, strengthens our bodies for physical health. Say more, if you would.
Sure thing. The restore rhythm is all about physical health. So while rest is about our spiritual health, restore is about our physical health. And these are both input rhythms because they invite us into replenishing. It's this replenishment cycle that we must receive before we can give. And so a lot of times I meet people kind of in my same season of life, working, raising kids, married possibly, you know, just whatever that is that you're responsible for, that God's entrusted to you. And you don't feel like you have a lot of margin. And because of that, you don't have a lot of energy. You feel like you're kind of always keeping up. There's always this low hum of overwhelmed, like just barely treading water. And I have felt that many times. And so part of the cadence of this input rhythm physically is about, what am I doing? What am I putting in my body? How am I taking care of myself? I'm in my 40s. I have 3 children that are 19, 17, and 15. And then we just adopted a girl 1.5 years ago from China. So I have, she has a Down syndrome diagnosis. My oldest has a Down syndrome diagnosis. And so life is very full. We've got, you know, first grade and we've got prom all happening in the same house. And so as a result, I'm realizing that I need stamina and energy for a 7-year-old, even though I'm in my mid 40s. And I'm trying to just ask the Lord, hey, how do I honor and steward the days you've given me? So part of that is very much about, am I eating food for fuel? Am I eating food in a way that is most natural, you know, that allows just that energy to stay high throughout the day, cutting sugar. Am I moving my body? You know, moving your body is just such a simple thing of like a brisk walk. You know, even a brisk walk for 10 to 15 minutes releases serotonin in your brain, which is the happy hormone. And it gives you a sense of confidence, of well-being, and momentum. So a lot of times if people have some level of fitness in their daily life, they tend to actually have more positive positivity to try new things or to risk or to push themselves. And so that's a natural way of raising serotonin just by getting outside and seeking adventure and doing those kinds of things. And then the last two rhythms, connect and create, the whole goal around those is that once you've been filled up, that you would go back out, you know, that you would have something to offer someone else instead of operating on fumes and depleted and still trying to serve. It's you're more serving out of the overflow because you have actually rested and restored your body. And so the output rhythm of connect is very much about your relational health. Friendship. I talk a lot about friendship, vulnerability, hospitality, conflict resolution, marriage, parenting, and just a lot of tools and expressions of how to do that. So if you hold a hug, for example, for 3 to 5 seconds, that releases oxytocin in your brain. That gives you a connection and a feeling of belonging and connection. And of course, our kids need that. You know, you can't hug everybody, but you can certainly hug your people. And so when they come in the door, I make sure I hold a hug, even if they're teenagers much taller than me, because I want them to know that this is home. And this is where, when they cross this threshold, they are known, they belong, and they are loved. And I just think it's those small things that we can do, the power of physical touch, the science behind a hug, just understanding that our brains are wired and we're healing them almost in some ways from past traumas. By just doing the very simple things of taking a walk or holding a hug or giving eye contact or being fully present with someone, that requires us to put our phones down and all the disciplines about getting a good night's rest. And then that final rhythm is create, and that is all about your vocational health. What are we doing with the days that we have? Maybe we need to recover our passion around something or dream again or feel permission to do that. Maybe we work with our hands or learn something new, or we say yes to responsibility or risk. Part of this is all just us living in the fullness that God established from the womb. So this planner really just gives you a lot of daily prompts to do this. And it's not a to-do list. It's an undo list. It's this idea that transformation happens just one small step at a time. So for example, if you were to open to Monday, let's say, well, today's Tuesday, let's do that. So under the rest rhythm, it just lets you set your intention instead of reaction. So today I will, and you could just check one thing, get sunlight, or maybe you'll say, I'll reflect and journal, or maybe I'll just enjoy tea or coffee. It's just something that allows you to still your heart and your mind. In the restore rhythm, today I will, maybe I will take a walk or make a salad or maybe have a dance party in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. The connect rhythm says, today I will. And again, these are all prompts. You just check what you want to do. No pressure. You can even just check none of them and put in what you want to do. I might encourage someone or work out with a friend or FaceTime someone. And then finally, the create rhythm is, today I will read something new. I'll learn something, right? I might color with a child, or I might write down some ideas about something or take a class. It's just these small prompts that get you living intentionally instead of reactionally. And because I'm a journaler, some people are planners, some are journalers. I think we need to be both. We need both action and contemplation. So I always on each day include a page to pause, examine, and journal and reflect, because we need to know what our heart's doing in the going. Like, how is our heart healing? How are we trusting? This is a very actionable step-by-step daily guide for 90 days that I really do believe leads to transformation.
I love this idea because it isn't an ought to or a should do. It really is an invitation to and a get to. I'm a journaler and I'm a planner. I'm doing this. I'm looking at this because I just feel the invitation, you know, and the intentionality behind it is so, as someone who years ago went through pretty significant burnout and someone who's got physical limits, but a lot of passion, I have to daily tweak my diet, my outputs, my inputs. But what you can do when you're intentional is just, it's unfathomable when you respect your limits and then appeal to God who has no limits. We just got a couple minutes left, but I wonder if you'd speak to that person who is, who battles who kind of that paralysis of analysis, who's got the perfectionism gene where they're just constantly driven by that need to be perfect. And then they can't ever get started because it's just, they're too afraid of failure. You know what I mean? Where you're kind of frozen. Yeah. What do you say to that person?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it still comes back to a loss of control or a need to control. And so sometimes we either want to control everything or we would rather just do nothing, a kind of that all or nothing personality, because if we can't do it perfect, why bother? And what I'm learning is the reason why this intentional living works for that personality is because you get to actually have agency over your day, your decisions. The greatest gift God gave us was the power of choice. He created us and didn't coerce us to love him. He said, hey, you know, I'm going to give you a free gift of freedom, but you get to decide if you want it or not. You get to say yes or say no. And so with that kind of agency, it's a reminder to us in a day, in a moment culturally, where we feel like we have a lot of a loss of control. We don't have control over many things. But what God is inviting into rhythm is control, is choice, is a decision power to go, yes, while I can't have much of a say in what's happening out there, I'm not going to react to it and let it render me powerless. What I will do instead is decide, what do I want to work on in here, right today? What do I have agency over? And it's a reminder that God has given us agency. He's given us gifts, birthright gifts. He's given us passions that we shouldn't just ignore. But maybe we just need that prompting daily to start back up again. And I do believe that when we do, I say give it 3 days. If you gave it 3 days of real intention, like you went through each day, you checked a box of what you decided you wanted to do that day, you will be surprised by how much that actually lifts your spirits from a despondency or helplessness and motivates you to keep going. Because rhythms are much different than resolutions. It's not an all or nothing, cold turkey, only, you know, 20% of people who make resolutions actually keep them. No, this is a rhythm, which means you get to practice your way into being. There's no wrong step, right? You just take one small step, because transformation happens one small step at a time.
Fantastic interview today. That's Rebecca Lyons, and we'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.